Good morning, Your Honors. I'm Stacey Boutiette, and I'm here on behalf of Appellant. We are here in an expert report case, and we are here because the two reports that were filed by the plaintiffs in this case against the defendant's appellants, which is Azle Manor, Inc. and Azle Manor, LLC, are wholly insufficient under the statute 74.351. I won't belabor the court in going into reading the language of 74.351, excuse me, because I know you're familiar with that already. I'm going to go dive right into the first report, which is the nurse's report, which was served ostensibly for the standard of care and breached the standard of care portions of the statutory requirements. This report is insufficient because it is wholly conclusory and speculation. The nurse starts the first part of her report by saying, unless the injury was literally allowed to happen, it seems reasonable to believe that the appropriate safety precautions were not implemented as the standard requires. This is a case in which there was a fall. And essentially what the plaintiffs are arguing is because the resident fell, there was negligence. The report does not set out any standard of care in specific terms as to what the defendants should have done or what they should have done differently. Her entire report goes through quoting the Nurse Practice Act, general statements such as the standard of care is to implement measures to promote a safe environment. The standard of care is to supervise nursing care. The standard of care is to institute appropriate nursing intervention. None of those tell the defendant what the defendant should have done. None of them tell the defendant what they did wrong and what they should have done differently. When she tries to discuss those standards with respect to the facts, all she says is, because the patient fell, the nursing home did not implement safety measures. She doesn't say what those safety measures are. She doesn't even know who was assisting the patient at the time of the incident.
How about her reference to the safety belt? That's pretty specific.
Well, actually, if you look at the report, Your Honor.
I'm looking at it at the top, page 5.
Okay. This is her conclusory end sentence, talking about if she had used a safety belt, this wouldn't have happened. However, if you look earlier in the report, starting at page 3, she doesn't know whether or not a safety belt was used. She's presuming, because the patient fell, a safety belt wasn't used. But a safety belt could have been used. The patient could have leaned forward over the safety belt, could have slipped under the safety belt. She doesn't know. If you look in the earlier of her reports, all of her speculation, everything is if. If the person did not implement the appropriate safety measures, including a safety belt, that's at page 21. I'm sorry, that's record page 21, page 3 of the report. She doesn't know. She says if a nurse was attending the patient, or if the nurse delegated that to a CNA, then if the patient fell because the CNA wasn't using a safety belt or other precautions, then this caused the injuries from a fall. But again, the entire report doesn't say the nursing home didn't use a safety belt, doesn't say the nursing home, well, she doesn't mention any other safety precautions. That's the only one she mentions, although she uses general language to talk about safety. But again, she doesn't know who was assisting her. Was it a nurse? Was it a CNA? Did they use a safety belt? Did they not? She doesn't know. She simply says, because they fell, I presume, and those are her words, I infer that they didn't use safety precautions. But in fact, that's not the case. There is no, as Appley tries to argue in his response, this is a fall case. It's basically res ipsa. She fell, therefore she was injured, therefore somebody was negligent. And that's simply not the case. I mean, the seminal case that started requirements, if you will, Palacios, was a fall case as well. And they found that report inadequate because it talked generally about safety precautions not being followed. You must know what actually occurred and tell the defendant what they did wrong. This patient was in this nursing home for 7 years. 7 years she received a bath and toileted every day. What is it on this day that the nursing home did wrong that they weren't doing every other day that caused her to fall? We don't know if she slipped under a belt or over a belt or if she was fell during a transfer. This simply doesn't say. The report doesn't tell us. It just speculates. She fell, therefore somebody must have been negligent. We don't know who, but it was somebody at the nursing home. And that goes to a second point with respect to the nurse expert's qualifications. She was an LVN and then an RVN. According to her CV, she did some serving as a nurse in a nursing home, home health. She did some home care in her own home. Nothing in the report gives her qualifications to talk about the nursing home. They have a direct liability claim against the nursing home itself, not vicarious claim, against the nursing home. There's nothing in this report that even mentions the defendant. It doesn't even mention the defendant by name with respect to the standard of care. It doesn't say that the nursing home wasn't observing policy and procedures, or the nursing home didn't implement policy and procedures, didn't have them, was funneling funds, didn't have enough staff. And there's nothing in there against the nursing home itself. There's nothing that says she's qualified to actually opine against a nursing home. In the Pack versus Crossroads case, the trial court excluded opinions from a nurse who, although a nurse who had functioned as a nurse in a nursing home, wasn't qualified to testify about the management of a nursing home, just about the nurse and the nursing standard of care. We have the same situation here. This nurse, there's no qualifications in her report or her CV that would qualify her to talk about the defendants in this case.
Well, she worked at a nursing home.
But that wasn't sufficient under Pack versus Crossroads, Your Honor. Working at a nursing home as a nurse might lend her some knowledge of what nurses at the nursing home do, but not what the nursing home management, who's the defendant here, should have done with respect to administering the nursing home, funding the nursing home, instituting policy and procedures of the nursing home. That's simply whether or not the particular nurse on the particular floor was assisting the patient properly with respect to nursing standards of care, which could go to a vicarious claim, but not to the direct liability claims. And in that regard, they have not identified the nurses or the CNAs or anyone else to which they're referring. They haven't established that, in fact, it was an employee of the nursing home who was involved in this. It could have been an independent social worker or a family member, or we just simply don't know. The report doesn't speak to who was assisting. Do we even know that it was an employee of the nursing home to establish even a vicarious claim?
Well, the nursing home knows that, though. I mean, is she supposed to develop the facts that she relies on in her report, do the investigation, and find out all these things that you say are missing?
Well, generally, Your Honor, in an expert report, yes, we are limited to the four corners. The plaintiffs are entitled to the medical records. They are entitled to do some discovery if they choose. They did not do so in this case. They are supposed to ferret out the facts and bring forth a report that sets out the standard of care, the breach, and the causation with respect to the specific defendant at issue and say what that defendant did wrong. In this case, they haven't set out any of the facts against the defendant. They've guessed. They said, well, she fell, so therefore, somebody must not have been assisting her properly.
Well,
but they haven't put forth any facts that show what the standard of care would have been and how it was breached. How did they not assist her? How did they not? It just simply doesn't tell us. It simply says they should have used safety precautions, they should have supervised, but they don't say that they didn't do it. They said if they didn't do it. And I presume that they didn't because she fell. But you can have a fall without negligence. That simply does not establish the negligence in this case. So the report is deficient on its face for being conclusory and speculative, and the expert is not qualified to make the opinion she makes against the nursing home itself as opposed to nursing staff.
I'm looking at the original petition, which was attached to your brief at tab 9, and I don't see any theories of direct liability pleaded.
If you look at their petition, excuse me, Your Honor, I'll have to find it.
It looks like they've pleaded negligence.
I believe in the general language of their petition, and I apologize, in the record I have before me, I don't have my, here it is, brief.
Wrongful
they
death.
They have against the nursing home and vicarious liability. Let me find my tab 9.
Direct liability is usually, you know, negligent credentialing
says,
or...
On page 3 of the petition, he says, plaintiff would show that the damages he and Ms. Faden sustained were a direct and proximate cause of the negligence of defendants and defendants' agents and employees. So we've got a direct claim against the defendants and then their servants, which is the vicarious part. The first part of the defendants is the direct claim. That's repeated a few times throughout the
petition. Acts of negligence alleged are failing to strap her in the chair, failing to reasonably monitor her after placing her in the chair, and then 3 is general.
Yes, Your Honor, that's correct. And the deficiency in the report from the standard of care perspective is that the report does not bear out that petition. The report does not say that they, in fact, did not effectively strap her in the chair or monitor once she was in the chair. The report says she fell, but they don't know any of the facts surrounding it. So if she fell, they must not have done those things. It doesn't say that they didn't do those things.
But
we don't know what they did, according to the report.
At the time that the plaintiff has to furnish the support, they haven't had an opportunity to do discovery yet. And so I think what they're arguing is that they don't know the answer to those questions yet. Because, I mean, there's a discrepancy between the hospital and the nursing home as to whether she was even in the shower chair or whether she was on a toilet chair or bedside commode. So so why can't an expert say, well, if these facts are true, then the nurse reached its standard of care by failing to strap her in?
Well, the courts that have addressed that issue, Bogar v. Esparza is one, and there's a few others cited in the brief, that lack of discovery is not an excuse at the stage of the expert report. And those cases go on in some detail about how 34.351S does not limit all discovery. It limits some discovery. They can take one or two depositions, they can get medical records, and they can discover the facts they need. This has even gone up on constitutional concerns, all of which were rejected in the courts, saying that at the time of the expert report, they must be able to put forth a sufficient case to inform the defendant of what it did wrong and to let the trial court know that the claims have merit. They can't say, well, I couldn't have addressed that issue and I can't tell you exactly what they did wrong and I can't set all the facts because I haven't had a chance to discover the case. Then under the expert report requirements, they don't have a right to bring that case. They have to be able to show at this early stage that their claims have merit.
Have you read Jordan, which is this year's Med-Mal case recently?
Which aspect of it, Your Honor?
Well, it says that whether or not the plaintiff made a good faith effort in part can be based on the state of the records that he was able to get.
Okay,
in
yes.
In other words, if the records are deficient, if they're missing, if they don't provide enough information, that can be taken into account as to whether or not the plaintiff was able to make a good faith effort to get a report.
It can, Your Honor, but as in that case, as of the others who addressed that issue as well, the plaintiff made an effort to conduct discovery and was prevented or prohibited from doing that. That is not the case here. The plaintiff...
And what he was talking about in that case is that some of the records were missing or were deficient. So what the point is, if the plaintiff is unable to get sufficient records, that should be able to be taken into account as to whether or not his report constitutes a good faith effort.
Well, in fact, the plaintiff did have all of the records in this case, and those records would have contained the names of the health care providers. This would have contained the facts that were occurring.
Whether or not she was strapped in with a safety belt?
It may or may not have been. It may or may not have been in those records, Your Honor. But beyond that, that is not the only flaw with the expert report. And moving on to the causation portion, if I may, before my time runs out, that report is similarly conclusory. And this one is really obvious from its face. It has essentially 2 sentences, and it just basically says that I believe that the accident of September 12 caused fracture of this patient's right non-displaced acetabular and finding suspicious for a non-displaced and non-impacted femoral neck fracture. holdings of this court as well as others say that just saying that the injury followed from the act is not sufficient for causation. He must explain how the injury resulted from the negligence. I see I'm out of time, Your Honor.
You're out of town.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning. Bart Beer on behalf of Appalese. May it please the court.
Counsel.
A couple things. First of all, there was an attempt at least to do some discovery initially in the form of disclosures, and plaintiff was limited in that regard. Justice Walker, you mentioned you were looking through the petition earlier and you noticed the wrongful death claim. That's been dismissed. It's not part of this. And so as it relates to the proximate cause argument, that's why that's not addressed. Let me start with that, the proximate cause issue. Dr. Laughlin, James Laughlin, wrote a report, admittedly short, and principally because, as in many personal injury cases where the injury is something that a common layperson can determine the cause of, don't believe a great deal of detail is necessary to explain how a fracture occurred. The woman fell from a chair, and that's dressed. How she fell, how the incident occurred, and Laughlin simply states the fall caused the fracture. You've got some case law from the, I think it's Trout versus Beatty, and that's cited in a brief that suggests that in the trial of these cases, when the injury is the causation of the injury is something that a layperson can determine based on common knowledge, they'll need that evidence.
Yeah, but the Supreme Court in the Murphy case has said that you may not need the evidence ultimately, but I think they made it pretty clear that you still need an expert report for a different reason. Yeah.
I guess my question is okay, we have this fracture. Is Dr. Laughlin expected to explain in great detail exactly how the body hit the ground and how that landing on the ground caused the fracture, or, you know, I guess what level of detail is enough? I think Dr. Laughlin's, personally, I believe the report's adequate in describing that the event caused the fracture. It's that simple.
Well, you're trying to add these two reports in tandem to make one report. I mean, that what you're doing?
Yes, Your Honor.
Patient breach and then a second report.
The idea was for the nurse to address the applicable standard of care and how it was breached and have Dr. Laughlin discuss causation. The nurse did go on in her report, I think, an attempt to address causation. I'm not here to suggest that's adequate on the issue of causation, assuming a report's necessary on it. Anyway, that's about all I have on Dr. Laughlin. On Nurse Massey, you know, I go back to the purpose of this whole reporting requirement. It's to provide a fair summary and let the court make a determination whether or not the claim's got any merit. Nurse Massey had the records. She reviewed them. She talks about what she reviewed at the beginning of her report. She addresses the applicable standard of care that she's familiar with and goes into detail in describing how the standard was breached here.
Well, what about the argument about that if she's worked at nursing homes, that's different from being in management of nursing homes and implementing procedures and policies to ensure the safety of the patient?
If I'm not mistaken, that's the direct negligence argument. And when you read the petition carefully, you see that the focus of the petition is on the conduct of the nurses and respondent superiors alleged, and the liability of the nursing home is based upon those nurses acting in the course and scope of their employment.
So are you saying there's not a direct action claim here, or what are you saying?
I'm saying that there's a claim based on the conduct of the staff.
Okay.
I have a couple other just things I want to bounce around and talk about besides just those reports. And one is that the panel spent a great deal of time briefing the res ipsa doctrine. And res ipsa is never mentioned in any of Appley's pleadings. It's not mentioned anywhere other than by appellants. And, you know, my understanding of res ipsa is that it's an evidentiary standard to establish a negligence claim. It's, you know, it's this thing wouldn't have happened but for negligence. And appellants seem to contend that appellees relying on res ipsa to establish proximate cause. And I don't want to get that all mixed up. This isn't a res ipsa case. This is simply appellants believing proximate cause is really simple. Fall, fracture. That's not res ipsa. And I don't know how much more discussion needs to be had there, but I wanted to point that out to the court. There's another issue that's brought up in the briefing, and that pertains to, and I can't tell, I mean, when I hear the argument today, it seems to be different than what I'm seeing in the brief. But in the brief, as I understand it, appellants are critical because appellees didn't, in their report, identify which particular defendant did what. And here we're talking about we didn't identify which particular nurse did something. Of course, the nurse isn't named in the lawsuit. The only reason there are two defendants here is because it was unclear to plaintiff at the time the lawsuit was filed which corporate entity owned and operated the business. And in fact, in the pleading, plaintiff says, you know, from here on I'm going to refer to them collectively because this business is owned and operated by one or both of these entities. And so then from there on they're referred to by Azle Manor, and I believe Nurse Massey does the same thing in her report, refers to Azle Manor. I don't think that's a failure to ID a defendant. I think that's we're identifying the operator of the nursing home. And I believe that's adequate. Appellants want to contend that because we didn't specifically identify which corporate defendant did what, that we have no report, and therefore shouldn't be allowed, if this court determines that the trial court abused its discretion, we shouldn't be allowed to a 30-day extension in accordance with Leland, because we effectively filed no report. I just don't believe that flies. I'll ask the court if there's any questions. I really don't have much more to offer. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel.
Your Honors, as rebuttal, I'd like to start by addressing the proximate cause issue. I don't think it's as simple as the appellee says that all he has to say is the fall caused the injury. In this case, we had a fall on September 12th. An x-ray was taken. There were no fractures seen in the x-ray. 10 days later, another x-ray was taken, and they identified a fracture at that x-ray. An expert opinion is required to say, how did the fall 10 days earlier, in which no fracture was seen, resulted in a fracture on an x-ray 10 days post? He needs to explain the causal connection between this fall earlier and the subsequent x-ray in which they noted a fracture? Was there a spontaneous fracture in the meantime? What was her weight, her height? Was she weight-bearing? Was she ambulatory? Did she fall in the interim? We don't know. He doesn't go into any explanation. He just says the fall 10 days earlier resulted in a fracture you see on the x-ray later. He doesn't explain the previous x-ray, which showed no fracture. An opinion is necessary here. I don't think you can find one case in any appellate court or Supreme Court that would find that expert report on causation acceptable under the statute. It is the epitome of conclusory. It says absolutely nothing. It links to none of the defendant's actions. It links to none of the defendant's negligence. It simply says the fall
results. The statute allows you to have separate reports for causation and for liability.
Yes, it does.
And so if he's not, I don't think he's intending to express any opinion on liability.
I'm not saying he needs to say what the defendants did wrong. He's not needing to say what their negligence was, but he does need to take their negligence and explain, link it to how it caused the injury. What's missing in his report is the how. How did it result in the fracture? And that is required under the statute.
But I think he does that. He says that the fall caused the fracture. He just doesn't say that the nurses were responsible for the fall, which may or may not be the case. All he's saying is that the fall caused the fracture. But and the other report is addressing the liability if that's the case.
But he needs to explain how the fall caused the fracture, because as I said, in this case we have a 10-day delay between the fracture appearing and the fall. And the cases require, he doesn't need to address the negligence, you're correct, but he does need to explain the how of the proximate cause. No report's been acceptable, even when standard of care and negligence has been fully explained, to just at the end say the fall resulted in the fracture. He actually needs to take the next step and explain the medical basis, the medical analysis as to how that occurs, particularly in this case where we've got this delay between the fracture appearing.
Why don't you give me an example?
Like her bone hit the concrete?
Yeah, what?
Yeah, the torque was 90 degrees and the force was, 500 pounds, I don't understand.
Well, no, it can allude to the things that I mentioned a moment ago that are also in the brief, which is if she slipped out of the chair and there was no fracture on September 12th, which is what the x-rays show, what happened to the next 10 days? I don't know. Was she overweight? Was there a spontaneous fracture due to her age, her diabetes, her kidney failure?
Well, he's
was
saying
there...
no.
That's excluding
that's
other causes.
He's saying no. He's saying the fall caused them, not spontaneous, not another fall. He says this fall caused the fracture.
But that is a conclusory statement which has to be explained. Even if his statement had merit, under none of the cases do they allow the conclusory statement to stand on its own without an explanation. And that's what makes it conclusory. In and of itself, the statement is conclusory, and he does need to explain how all those other factors were excluded and how it was based on the fall alone, and that he does not do.
What if the x-ray the next day had shown fractures? Then you wouldn't have a problem with this?
I would still say it was conclusory. I would still say he needs to explain the medical rationale behind how the fracture occurred. Also, we've got a part of the report where it says it is, I think it's possible for a fracture. All he does is basically quote the radiology report. That's all he does. Is takes the language straight out of the x-ray report where it says findings suspicious for non-displaced femoral head fracture, etc. He offers nothing other than that. He's actually quoting a medical record there. The findings suspicious for doesn't even mean a fracture. It's possible it's a fracture. They really couldn't tell. They did a later CT scan and they found what was possible. It's suspicious for the fracture. And you notice he says in his report, well, there was some dispute as to within the medical records whether or not this fracture occurred, and I'm using the CT report as definitive and is quoting its language. So given all those circumstances of this case, he does need to explain the how to establish an appropriate proximate cause under the statute.
And do you have a problem with his being allowed to do that if we determine that the report was inadequate?
I do, Your Honor. I don't think that Leland applies in this case. I think that Leland says that a 30-day extension... may be given, but it is discretionary. And I think in this case, the defendant basically admitted in his response and here to this court that he doesn't think he needed to even really file an expert report in this case. I don't think he took that obligation seriously. He did not request a 30-day extension at the trial court level. He didn't provide a response at all. And I think it's too late. A week before oral arguments, he says, oh, wait, well, maybe if I'm going to lose, will you please give me my 30-day extension? I think it's too late for that. I think his reports are so insufficient they constitute no report under Bogar v. Esparza, whereas in that case they found they weren't entitled to a 30-day extension on remand because the report was so inadequate that it was not curable. I think we have in this case that you can't just add something linking. The reports don't mention. He now says, well, I don't have a direct liability claim. I guess he's waiving that at this point, but there is a direct liability claim in his petition against the defendants. Yet the defendants are never identified. What they did wrong is never mentioned. That's, in fact, no report as to the defendant, coupled with the fact that it's extremely inadequate on causation and standard of care. I would represent to this court that there shouldn't be given an opportunity for a remand for an extension at this point, and that Leland says you can do that if you choose to for a deficient report, but as far as the clarifies that if it's so deficient that it's not curable, you can't.
Leland only came out June 13th.
Yes, it did.
All of this failure to ask for didn't.
Right. The other case was in May of this summer as well. They're both very recent, and I recognize that Leland came out right after that one. But it didn't address it.
Counsel, thank you both for your arguments. Your case is submitted, and you will have an opinion shortly. Thank you. We will stand in recess until this afternoon. Thank you.
Bye.